Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
That kid is back on the escalator again.
Ain't gonna hurt.
Is my boomstick.
Game over, man. Game over.
Welcome to the Bargain Bin. He is your host, Ben Mason.
And he is your co-host, Sandro Luketic. And today we're talking 1994's No Escape. We assume if you're listening to this episode, you have already seen the movie. So Sandro, tell me, why did I pick this one?
You really like Owen Wilson, and it's been a little while since we did one of his movies.
I knew you were going to do that. I fucking knew it. I knew right away. I knew as soon as I searched No Escape, you were going to pull like different movie, same title fuckery.
Have I become that predictable?
Well, I mean, you've only done it once, but I knew it was going to happen again. I just didn't know this soon.
I pretty much do it anytime there's a movie with the same title.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, it was my pick. I gave you a list of some movies I had written down, and this one specifically I had on my list because my dad constantly told me that this is an enjoyable movie, at least to him, mm-hmm. and that he feels that good or bad, more people just need to hear about it.
Which is basically the entire purpose of this podcast.
Mm-hmm. And except for when we do movies that everybody knows, like our Scream episode.
Yeah. Forever lost.
How many bad jokes can I go to the well with today?
So you're off to a good fucking start, man. And that's where you leave it.
Yep.
All right. No, you gave me different years to select. I picked 94. I think our niche area is late 80s, early to mid 90s. So it was really not much of a decision for me. I went right to that one. I had actually seen this movie not that long ago. Of course, I saw it for the first time years ago, I believe, when it came out. I think I do. I still own the VHS that I got from the video store, the very copy that I saw for the first time. But yeah, it is a movie that, despite its amazing cast, no one really seems to know. And I don't know why it got lost in that shuffle.
I was having a conversation with my dad where he was telling me that more people need to hear about this movie. And I was like, what movie is this?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm with you on this. More people need to talk about it.
Yeah. And like, if you go to the Wikipedia page and you go to the column on the right hand side that just gives you a breakdown of like the key players, you look at who's starring in it. So what, 2, 4, 6, 7 names. I know all of them, but I'm also a movie guy. The thing is, anybody who watches movies every now and then has seen movies starring all of these people, except for maybe Stuart Wilson. Like this is not a small cast of unheard of actors. These are major players. So I'm glad that things came together that we can talk about this movie for better or for worse.
Well, let's talk about those major players.
Okay.
How many of those major players have we seen already?
I had a real tough time with this one, and I feel bad because they are pretty big names. And I only came up with one, and it was almost a cameo in one movie we've covered.
Okay.
I only got Lance Henriksen.
Okay.
From Super Mario Brothers.
As the king?
As the king.
Yeah, okay.
But we must have covered Ray Liotta, in something else, right?
No.
Kevin Dillon?
No.
Kevin J. O'Connor?
No.
Michael Lerner?
Mm-mm.
Ernie Hudson?
Yep.
Fuck!
It's just the two of them. But you also missed two appearances by Lance Henriksen on our show.
Oh, what was the other one?
Because this is his fourth.
What was the other two? What were the other two?
Is that you moving on, or?
No, I want to know those, and then we'll go to what I missed Ernie Hudson in.
So Lance Henriksen was Chains in Stone Cold.
Chains! Fucking Stone Cold! God damn it, that movie's good. Yeah. How could I forget him in that?
And then he had a very minor role in Abominable as Ziggler Dane, one of the Hunters.
I thought you didn't believe in Squatch. That was good. Yeah. That's a long time ago. You can't hold me to that one.
I mean, I didn't know there was a time frame that we went through. I thought it was just our episodes, but
now okay. There is. You give me 2 weeks, 2 weeks tops.
Well, if you had missed Abominable, it would have been like fine. But Chains
is pretty. That's Johnny Depp Ninth Gate level of me fucking up.
All right. So anyway, back to Ernie Hudson, who is the only other one.
Yeah, I don't know, man. No, I have no idea.
He was O'Malley in Airheads.
Of course he was. God damn it. He was good in that. He was really, that was a great movie.
Never gets old.
Speaking of never getting old, Ernie Hudson doesn't get old. That man hasn't aged in like 40 years.
Nope.
Okay.
Contributions.
Hop right in.
Let's do it, man.
Title card. In the year 2022, the international prison system is operated by private corporations. Criminals from all over the world are exploited at a profit. Prisons have become big business. Accurate prediction. I mean, this is 94. I feel like that's what the prison system was then. It's definitely where it was in 2022. And we're only, what, like 4 months removed from there. So, yeah, well done. And this is based off of a book called The Penal Colony by Richard Hurley from 87, I think, 86. I don't know.
Right, finish your text crawl thing here.
I'm done.
Oh, okay. All right. Would you like to take a guess what bothers me about this?
The text, not text crawl, but the title card in general?
Pointless
and doesn't need to exist because we get a rehash of it immediately?
It's something I've complained about many times on this show.
It's what you do.
Don't date yourself. It's 2020. Just say
it's fucking fine. Why? Well, 2022, that's fine. Complain about it in like 2068, okay? 2022 is fine.
I don't care. It comes up all the time. And if that text crawl just said in the near future or in the distant future, I'd be like, all right, yeah.
That's your problem.
How many times has it come up?
Yeah, it doesn't fucking matter.
It does to me, man.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. You know
what? There's going to be some poor kid that's now going to go looking for that island because it should have existed 3 years ago.
God damn it. Okay, you know what? I'll give you this. I understand why you dislike that so much because I see the flip side of it. And I love shit like that because it gives me an idea. Okay, this is set 2022. Film was made in 94. This was supposed to be their dystopian view of the future. It is now our past. It adds a bit of charm for me. That's why I love all of the movies from the 80s that are set in 97, like Running Man, like Escape from New York. There's a weird bit of charm in knowing that their projection of the future is decades behind us.
As a stupid child, I panicked worrying about Judgment Day constantly until 1995.
How? What? What? Did you think Terminator 2 is like a fucking documentary?
That's what the movie had me believe. That's why you can't do this stuff. You're confusing people.
You don't date your film because you terrify children. That's your argument.
You shouldn't terrify children in the first place. I mean, that's not cool.
Children aren't supposed to be fucking watching No Escape, man.
You were a child when you watched this movie. I guarantee it. When did you first watch it?
I was 12.
Okay, that's a child. You're not even a teen yet.
I'm 1 year removed. Doesn't matter. I was mature for my age. We haven't even gotten to an actual shot in the film yet. But I do want to talk about that.
Okay, I'll stop.
It is a really shocking opening post title card. I thought it was a freeze frame for the longest time of those three officers standing on that pedestal, and then we get Marines marching in formation. But one of them, Captain John Robbins, played by Ray Liotta, breaks formation and shoots his commanding officer in the head. What an intense way to start your film.
I didn't think that this was going to be like one of our characters. I thought this was one of those where it's like, hey, here's some footage of what's wrong with the world type thing, you know? Like,
yeah, me too. I didn't remember this from previous viewings of the film. It was incredibly effective.
Mm-hmm.
It also didn't look live action. It almost had a weird animation quality to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we cut to the prison train, and the exterior looks like Mars in Total Recall. We never get an explanation for this.
It's not my 2020.
Well, it's 2022. That's why.
Oh, sorry.
What year was Total Recall set in? Was it 2020?
Oh, dude, I don't know. Why are you
asking? Okay, it doesn't matter. But yeah, we get no reason for this. It looks post-apocalyptic, but that's never referenced. And I'm going to jump ahead a lot here, but if the world is in this state, explain the island.
Isn't it because a peninsula?
The island? No. The part of the island where the insider's camp is a peninsula of the island.
Okay. All right. My bad.
Because the wasteland surrounding this prison seems like it would be a better punishment than sending prisoners to like a jungle paradise.
Yeah, well, it's an unlawful jungle paradise where they kill each other and have to survive.
So, everywhere. Okay, so this prison, Leviticus Level 6 Maximum Security Penitentiary. Up until this point, what are your thoughts on the practical effects?
Not bad. Yeah. I think that they did a good job keeping it to a minimum. It's not like we focused too long on, say, the outside of the transport or anything like that. And it just kind of keeps moving along, so I'm totally fine with it.
Yeah, there's definitely forced perspective and detailed model works, which adds a bit of charm to the movie for me. The warden, played by Michael Lerner, who has been in countless numbers of films. We've seen him many, many times before, yet oddly enough, have never covered one of them. He tears down the new arrivals, including Robbins. And I think this is more of an attempt to just give us a crash course in the history of Robbins, but they never really fully go into it. So we know that he's a decorated war hero. He's escaped 2 level 5 prisons, has an aversion to authority, and is prone to outbursts of violence. It doesn't really seem like a hero to me.
No.
It just seems like a hardened convict.
I mean, the impression that I got at this point in the movie is that heroes in the traditional sense don't really exist.
Yeah.
And this movie doesn't want us to root for like the altruistic good guy, just a guy who's up against it and trying to get through on his own.
Everybody in this movie is a villain to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
It's different shades of villainy, I guess.
I mean, any character with any dialogue is a criminal for some reason, or the warden, who is clearly not a good guy.
Yeah. So after Robbins is shown an act of kindness by his cellmate, the warden forces Robbins to torture that cellmate as punishment to both.
Hoarding food is a crime?
Yeah, I found that really weird.
Weird one. And the warden even says something like, you get what you need and nothing more, nothing less type thing. It's like, so what? And he eats it later or saves it for the guy who's just gotten there. But it definitely goes to show that the warden is, I would say for the most part, just a cheapskate, doesn't want to spend money on food and doesn't want anybody to even remotely question his authority, no matter how big or small it is.
Yeah, he's gone mad with power, for sure. Mm-hmm. Would you say it's an effective punishment? Had it gone to his planning?
Well, I mean, I would say so.
Yeah.
I don't think that guy would be hoarding food again if he got those 20 lashes.
Yeah, it's a great way of breaking will. It's a brutal punishment. But we're dealing with John Robbins here, not your average con. My major problem with this scene is what happens next. And that's taking the warden hostage to immediately give up it's in no way a smart move in this scenario.
I was, the whole time, I was like, why aren't you just killing this guy?
Yeah.
You've painted a picture of this character that does not make me believe, with his outbursts of violence and so forth, that he wouldn't just off the warden here. They just painted a picture of how this prison, there's no escape. This is the rest of your life. Obviously, you're not going to get off early due to good behavior. There's nothing about the scenario that makes me think that he's going to do anything but kill the warden, and he doesn't.
Yeah. Immediately gives up. There's no reasoning behind it. And I guess it's hinted at, kind of, that he doesn't forgive himself for past transgressions, which, yeah, I get that. It makes sense. But by the time this is actually realized later in the film, this scene is long forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
So from an artistic stance, I get it. Was it effective? Not at all. But it was a surefire way to thrust us into the world of the prison island, Absalom. And it's beautiful. Like, the helicopter shots they used to establish this setting is phenomenal.
Yes, looks like a punishing place to be.
Yeah, perfect setting for tribal warfare. It's well, the island basically just gets supply drops and is constantly monitored by the warden via satellite. It's a cool idea, but it's not an original one. So can they do it better than what we've seen before? We'll find out. And they just throw him off the helicopter and fly away.
Yeah.
I like that.
Why would they risk staying there any longer? It's very clear that no one on that island would be kind to them if they were there for more than a couple minutes.
A question for you, Sandro, is he hits the ground and is immediately covered in rats?
Yep.
How?
They don't scurry away when something large falls from the sky.
Like, for that amount of rats to be on him immediately, he's killed probably 50 of those motherfuckers just by landing on them.
I find it interesting, too, that they even reference this later. Yeah. He's talking about fears, and he says, I forget the guy's name, his Casey. Little buddy. Okay, he says to Casey, yeah, I have that fear with rats myself. Never comes up again.
Nope.
I thought, nope. Oh, is there going to be some sort of rat scene later? No.
There must have been something planned, right? Because seeing this and seeing his reaction, it's the only time he's ever afraid in the fucking movie. And then he mentions it to Casey when Casey talks about his fear of sharks or aversion to sharks.
When Casey gets kidnapped later in the movie, mm-hmm. put him in a pit surrounded by rats or something. Yeah. Oh, I have to try and overcome my fear. No, it never comes back again.
Honestly, though, realistically, if you're on a prison island fighting a gang of murderers, I think I'd be pretty okay with dealing with rats.
Well, then just don't put that in the movie. You can have them land where the rats are and obviously have to move away from it and perhaps show a little bit of fear because, oh, there's so many of them that will swarm me. But you don't have to put a focus on it again later and go back to it. It's just, well, he landed by some rats and had to get out of there.
Yes, and you bring up a very good point here. And that's why I think that they're trying to humanize John Robbins, and it doesn't work. The character feels very much removed from well-developed characters, from the insiders, to an extent through the outsiders. He just kind of feels like an observer, an active observer, but he's our hero, and we're supposed to feel something for him, and we just don't. At least I don't. Do you feel that way?
Not at this point, but having watched enough movies at this point, I also felt like they're building something up. There's got to be a misdirect because they're not going to just give us this character with no reason to root for him. Like, I'm anticipating a twist right now.
Okay. What? No, that's good. I was with you. Having finished the film numerous times, like having seen it, I'm not, but I understand what you're saying.
Well, I'm trying to go through my mental process as I go through the movie.
Yeah, of course. Great sound design here after the rat scene. It immediately lets us know to be afraid of the jungle. Very well done. but the sounds we're hearing are being made by members of the Outsiders, quote unquote, and they capture Robbins immediately. I 100% have problems with the capture of John Robbins here.
Can I ask a question before we get into that?
Please do.
Why do some of the Outriders look like they came out of Mad Max, and some of them look like they came out of Bone Tomahawk?
It's only a reason. Like, I found out the reasoning this morning, actually. I discovered it. The Outsiders is not a gang of criminals. It's a conglomerate of gangs. So within their society are different gangs, and each gang has their own thing. It's kind of like the Warriors. I don't know if you've seen the Warriors.
But it feels like they're working together here.
It does, and they are. And that becomes a problem later on with the story, because there's talks of having to unite the gangs, or talk to the different gangs. They're like, well, you have, and you are, because you're all living together somewhat successfully. So that's a misstep in storytelling.
Okay.
Yeah, thoughts on his capture, though?
No thoughts.
No? How they catch him? You have no problem with that?
No.
Do you remember how they catch him?
Not even a little bit.
He's this big, badass brute. He's taken out with a rock in a sling. But the guy's swinging it around his head for a few seconds. John turns, looks at him, stares at him doing it, then screams and charges at him. So the guy looses the rock, hits him in the forehead, and knocks him out.
Feels weak, man. Here.
It's so weak and stupid and doesn't make sense for somebody that we're built up to believe is like a maniac, like crazy good fighter. We saw him take a warden hostage in front of a bunch of armed guards. He got taken out by a rock with string that he saw coming at him. It's just problematic for me. Anyway.
Worked on Goliath.
Okay, that's a different story altogether. This is no Dave and Goliath.
Okay, all right.
Next up is the Outsiders camp, and I want to hear your thoughts on the Outsiders and their society.
It doesn't seem like it would function to me. Like, I get it. You know, we have a leader here in, what is it, Merrick?
Walter Merrick, yep.
Yeah, and they listen to him, and he seems to... But at no point do I think this would work. Like, at any time, any one of these is going to just backstab him and take over, Starscream style.
Yeah. There is no reason for us to believe anything otherwise.
Yeah, why are they listening to him? He doesn't even come off as like the most intimidating one there. So why are they listening to him?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for bringing that up, because I really enjoy the character of Walter Merrick. I found him extremely charismatic, surprisingly funny, but he's not threatening.
No.
At all.
I feel like he needs some sort of leverage if he's not going to be the leader because he's physically imposing. Complete hypothetical here. None of the other ones can read. Does they make a point of that later too, that Ray Liotta can read?
Yes.
Maybe they get some sort of written communication on where the supply drops are, and he's invaluable to them because he's the only one that can read. Now he has a leverage reason to be untouchable. But in this state, I'm like, somebody
important.
Yeah, at this point, somebody could just off him and take over, and I don't see any reason why he should be in charge. Like, he's very charismatic, no question about it. But in this situation, I feel like it would be a might makes right situation, in that anybody who could take him out would just be the leader.
Yeah. Realistically, that's what would happen. Merrick forces Robbins to fight Ralph. Lasts a couple of seconds and is by far one of the funniest scenes in the entire film.
Oh, he says, like, you have to last 5 minutes with him. It's like 30 seconds.
Not even.
No.
Ralph, big imposing tattooed guy, smashes the arm off of a statue, and before he's even done doing that, Robbins has thrown his spear into Ralph's heart. Ralph falls over dead. So Merrick tries to recruit him. And Robbins pulls the hostage trick again, But this time actually steals the gun that Merrick has and makes a break for it. These scenes are too close together.
Yes, and why does he let him live? I get it, he throws him in the pit, but the only intimidating thing that was supposed to be in the pit was Ralph.
Yeah, and Ralph is in the pit. He's just dead.
So, like, why are you...
I think actually the most intimidating thing in that pit right now is bacteria.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah. It's a decent chase scene that we're given, though.
Yep.
Yeah, we get to see the different types of traps the Outsiders have. It really reminded me of the traps that Ewoks set up, though.
Well, I love the dummy that runs in after the log has swung the one way to take it from behind. It's like, I saw it coming from a million miles away, and yet it's still entertaining every time.
It's enjoyable, man. It really is. Even the sound is like, yeah. And then the log swings back and there's just a corpse attached to it.
I guess we couldn't get away from the Home Alone trap types after last week's Nightmare on Elm Street. So we gotta get another one in here now.
Very true. So Robbins almost escapes, but ends up taking an arrow to the ass, followed by two tranquilizer darts. And then his stunt double falls over a cliff in what is probably the scariest free fall I have ever seen. So, questions. Where do they get the darts?
They make them.
I don't think anyone there could make those. Those also look like they're like factory-made darts.
No, they're reeds.
Okay. There's reeds dipped in pond water.
Yes. Now that's enough. That'll take you out.
I kind of figured it was a part of a supply drop, but then at the same time, I'm thinking, why? you got to stop asking questions, I guess. But looking,
it would only make sense if they included things like weapons in the supply drops, if the warden had like a side hustle where he let people gamble on them killing each other.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
So,
looking over that cliff, Sandra, there is no way he would have hit the water.
No. He might have hit the water after he tumbled off the rocks a few times.
They would have destroyed him. There's no fucking way that would have worked. But yeah, he falls off the cliff into the water and then washes ashore further down the river and is rescued by another tribe of prisoners who are known as the Insiders. And I really don't like these names.
Almost automatically makes the Outsiders sound worse too, because you're like, oh, this is what you're playing to.
Of course the warden is pissed by this, but we're not entirely sure how he's monitoring everything.
Cameras.
It's just satellite. No cameras.
Satellite cameras.
Okay. They're very, very blurry pictures. Robbins regains consciousness in a well-decorated hut, and we're treated to the view of the Insiders' camp. So, in comparison to the Outsiders, what's your take on the on Sanctuary or the Insiders' camp?
So, my thoughts on it now or at the time of watching the movie?
At the time of watching.
At the time of watching it, I'm like, oh, okay, look, they're going to paint a picture of this place that's run well in a good society. And in the end, it's going to have this seedy underbelly that's just as bad as the Outsiders, but at least tries to mask it.
It's a very realistic perspective. I didn't have the dark side to it, but what are your thoughts on it after having seen the film?
I still think it's not perfect. This scene where they exile the one guy showcases it the most to me, but even that is a little bit of a misdirect because they don't go any further than that.
Yes.
But even when that, I'll talk about that scene when it happens.
Okay. I have notes here just saying that I thought it presents itself as being incredibly civilized. It is, for the most part, clean as it can be. Much more advanced than the Outsiders in that they have windmills, water wheels, agriculture, livestock. It's basically an autonomous society, whereas the Outsiders rely on supply drops from the warden. We've got fortified walls with watchtowers. Honestly, it looks pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that the majority of the film is set here because you can tell they put a lot of focus on it and it played out well. But we also meet some other key players. We meet Hawkins, played by Ernie Hudson, who is the chief of security. and more importantly, the father, played by Lance Henriksen, who is the leader of the Insiders. I love Lance Henriksen, man. Every time he's on screen.
How can you not?
Like, in everything he's ever done, even bad films, bad TV shows, he just, there's something about him that is captivating. But the father tells Robbins that he is the only person to ever escape the Outsiders. And I think that would be doing a great job of building up the threat of the other, you know, group of prisoners, how menacing and violent and how dangerous they are. But Robbins got away so easily, it kind of made them look bumbling and just made him look slightly more resourceful than normal.
You're the only one who's ever gotten away, because most of the people that fell off that cliff hit the rocks.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So the movie itself is basically order versus chaos. That's the theme.
Pretty much.
So next up we meet Dysart, played by Jack Shepherd. And I'm not entirely sure what this character does. He seems to be a tech guy in a world without technology.
Yep, that's the impression that I got.
I like him, but I don't think we need him.
I mean, they make a big deal out of how Ray Liotta is able to read, so they definitely need some smart people around.
True. Finally get some more info about the island, though. 200 miles off the mainland. Outsiders are roughly 600 people, insiders 98. Islands under constant monitoring by satellite, and there are heavily armed gunships 50 miles from the coast. It's okay, world building. I'm fine with that. So Robbins checks in with the germaphobe Tom King, played by Ian McNeice. I guess his role is to just help newcomers adjust.
That's exactly what he said.
Oh, shit. Okay, good.
Pretty much says, like, yeah, they stick me with all the new people to help them, like, help show them the ropes.
Interesting element to the movie in his fear of disease, because there's no medication anywhere. So germs, sickness, extremely dangerous. And that also adds to the world building that I love, because there are little bits of information this movie gives us that are just delicious morsels of information. It really makes this world feel lived in at times, but then out of nowhere, they'll turn around and just, they'll just ignore everything they've said and done, and it just feels cookie cutter action film. But yeah, basically the Outsiders are deadly, but so is any potential small infection.
Yep. Which I don't mind that actual point, because that when he said it made me think, like, oh yeah, what would they do? But at the same time, I don't think it's really that necessary either.
He's too over the top with it. He is like the physical embodiment of that warning. We get the intro to Casey, played by Kevin Dillon, who is phenomenal in this movie, I would say. And Casey's enamored with Robbins. It's almost impossible not to like Casey, I would say. And I assume this is where you're going to tear that down.
He just goes a little too hard on his admiration for him. That's all. I'll leave it at that. I don't want to hate on it too much. But
he's a kid. He's just a kid, man.
There's so many gaga eyes that he's shooting at him. Like, just calm down, dude. Just calm down. Act like you've been here before, man.
My next note is ridiculous. It just says Robbins examines the coastline. That crate never had a chance. But yeah, I get it. Like, you want to escape this prison island, so you test and see what the waters are like, and like the waves are going to smash you against the rocks. You're not getting off of there without a boat.
It's literally testing the waters.
Yeah,
I see what you did there.
Exactly, unintentionally perfect.
Yeah, unintentionally.
Next up, we get what I consider to be one of the more annoying characters, and that's Stefano, played by Kevin J. O'Connor, which is unfortunate because I like O'Connor a lot. I think his acting is fantastic. But this character of the salvage man, is this character necessary whatsoever?
No.
Yeah. I'm assuming you didn't like him?
No, first of all, it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
Second of all, it doesn't add anything. He's just kind of annoying.
He is really annoying. I'm assuming this is a character that played a major role in the, or not a major, but a larger role in the novel, and they just wanted to keep it in the movie. But moving on to that night. At night, Sandro, I feel like a nerd saying this, Sanctuary looks like it's right out of Skyrim. I thought it looked amazing. But Robbins spies a group of insiders sneaking pieces of a structure out of the camp. And I kind of wish that this was played up more, because this is a perfect setting to have mystery. And this is a little bit of mystery that is just repeated once more in the film, and then it's revealed. But something like this, no, like you said before, Sanctuary looks idyllic for the most part, but probably has a seedy underbelly. And that's kind of what I was thinking the first time I saw this. I'm like, oh, what's going on? Like, what do we not know? Like, what are they doing? Is it good? Is it bad? Why are they keeping it secret? And it doesn't really matter, because they just straight out tell you later on. But having that mystery in this film, I think, would have benefited the movie overall.
I agree.
Do you want to get into Casey's backstory?
No.
No, you don't want to, or no, you don't remember it?
Well, something about he was a driver for a crime. He would have, he's yeah, I don't care.
Yeah.
I didn't like Casey.
Okay. Yeah, basically, he was a gopher during a kidnapping. Go get food, watch the kids they kidnapped, but the kids died, even though he tried to stop it. Cut from that into Killian, who makes the booze on the island. And I'm realizing now, there are so many throwaway characters in this movie. He's pretty funny, ornery old man, but
he gets so mad, and I get it, but like Ray Liotta insults the alcohol, and he's like, "You insult my life's work."
I love that he's also like, this one-armed man can still kick your ass.
Yeah.
It's funny. I get it. It's just, it seems weird, because normally in this type of scenario, everybody serves their purpose to the story, not to the society, and aren't really referenced again. So a creative choice, sure. Effective choice, maybe not so much.
I think it probably goes back to what you said, is that they're just trying to fit characters in. From the book.
So next up, we get a part that you said you didn't really appreciate, but you get. And that's the display of law within Sanctuary.
Well, yeah, because they make a big deal about how they're so vastly outnumbered by the outsiders, and that they need all the help they can get. And they really do try to paint a dire picture. Then they have this guy who fell asleep at his post, and Ray Liotta, when he's following them at night, sees the guy sleeping, right? Doesn't really question it or anything. And probably part of the reason why Ray Liotta was able to get to where he was trying to go, right? Mm-hmm. And then they exile him. And Ray Liotta very, very clearly says, like, you're sentencing him to death. Like, you might not be killing him, but you're killing him. And even in my mind, I'm like, if you're this in dire need of people, how about just reassign him to not like night duty, as he clearly just can't stay awake?
The answer to that is, if you show weakness in that, and someone's just going to try and pull the same thing, be like, well, I don't want to do it because I'm not going to be able to stay awake.
Well, then I think that something more dire should have occurred, even if it's as like, oh, some animal got into some of their food stores or something, but he was just sleeping and nothing happened.
Yes, I know, but it could, and what's more terrifying than the unknown? Nothing says that he's actually going to be killed by the outsiders. They could even take him on as one of their own. Sure, it wouldn't be as fruitful of a life, but we don't know what's going to happen to him. And I think the father really lays it out so well that in Robin's eyes, you can see him kind of understand the reasoning behind it. I think it really makes that society feel more real. But whether you or I, you know, whether we disagree or not, I think we can both agree on the fact that there's some great acting from Liotta and Henriksen here.
Absolutely.
and not just a great acting, but a great character interaction between Father and Robbins. Overall, the scene, whether or not we agree on the overall theme of it, is very well done.
Well, I don't think we disagree on the theme. I just feel like the stakes reasoning. Were a little lopsided.
Yeah. So back at the Outsiders camp, Merrick shows his authority by killing a man who stole food. And I think this scene is hilarious.
Okay, go on.
Now, I'm just a fan of the idea of an uprising against Merrick, especially when the man who stole the food suggests that Robbins lead them instead of Merrick because he took Merrick out. And Merrick just snaps, cuts his head off. And that's that, basically. It's time to plan a full attack on the Insiders.
See, and that's the impression that I got. Not so much that he killed him because he stole food. I think he just got pissed off that he was insulted that the guy brought up how Robbins kicked his ass.
Yep, that's exactly why.
Yeah.
And that this is where I realized the whole gangs within the Outsiders. Because they talk about how they have to unite the gangs here for a full-on attack. And he's like basically kind of saying that something along the lines of it would take too long, blah, 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 so we have to make it personal. Whatever. It doesn't make sense. So we cut to Sanctuary where we're just in time for the Christmas party. I have a major issue here. I want to see if you can guess what it is.
The music?
Yes. Where the fuck is that music coming from?
A stereo.
Okay. So the stereo floated through the water and they fixed it. They're not getting a radio signal. I don't know how they're powering it.
There's a band in the corner that they don't show on camera.
Yeah. Okay. And what media is the music on? Like there's a bunch of things in this scene that really irritate me, but I try and suppress it because it's supposed to be a fun scene. Like the lighting of the Christmas tree. I get it. Stefano in a scene that I don't hate him in when he's basically Santa Claus. What's your take on that part?
I actually really like that.
Yeah.
Because it just further paints the atmosphere. These guys are so excited to get chewing gum.
Yep. Just like it came off the factory line.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, but sure.
This is, I would say, a Sandro nitpick for me.
Okay.
But it was definitely the forefront of my issues here. They have no lights, like electricity for lights, no light bulbs. Everything is lit by torch, as we see in the background. Yet all of the scenes are lit so well. There's no flickering to the light whatsoever. It just takes me right out of the scene. Just add a bit of flickering on their faces when you're doing close-ups. Make it believable that the entire room is lit by firelight. Like it, I don't like it. And I know it's a nitpick, but it really took me out of the movie in this one instance.
I'm glad that you pointed out that it was like a Sandro level nitpick, because that's exactly what it was.
One last thing about the scene, though, is I really, really enjoy the fact that the Outsiders picked the night of the Christmas party for their assault.
Well, yeah, their defenses would be more loose at that point.
One thing that we get throughout the entire film is Robbins being hell-bent on trying to escape. Father tries to convince him to, stay, to forgive himself for what he did in the past, but wishes him well in the future. And I found that kind of refreshing because the father's just like, look, you're not going to make it, but if you want to try, just go for it. Like
it's not a prison.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a prison within a prison. He's in a prison, but
it's their version of freedom. People are willing to do what they want as long as it doesn't negatively affect the others.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. So the attack. Insiders get a warning from a signal fire as they have a spy in the rivals' ranks. I like that a lot, but it's another throwaway line for a pretty important fucking plot point. I think that would actually be a pretty good prequel film.
how somebody got themselves in with the outsiders.
Yeah.
In
with the outsiders.
You know what I mean.
No, I think that there's a really good story to tell there, and it's never really addressed until we get the reveal of who the spy is, and then you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and then we also know how his story ends, so
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. But Casey asks for Robbins to stand with him on the wall, but is chased away. And I know you're not a fan of Casey, but I think this is a great bit of writing here. You immediately feel Casey's desperation and rejection, but then the courage that he has when Robbins decides to actually join him on the wall for the attack. It all happens so fast. It's so well written. It's so well acted. The movie really does shine in certain places. I think this is one of them. What are your thoughts on the attack strategy of the outsiders?
I don't know. They attack. What are you getting at?
I just mean, like, obviously flaming arrows are a decent tactic against a wooden structure.
Well, yeah, that makes sense immediately.
But
it doesn't feel as organized as it could be. Clearly, there's the diversion, and they try to have Merrick go after the father when everybody else's attention is elsewhere.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that the biggest strategy they have is to cut off like the snake's head, right? Get rid of the father, leave them disoriented and kind of unsure of how to defend themselves. But it feels pretty rudimentary from a tactic standpoint in the first place. So, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you 100%. I think the smartest thing they did for this attack was to use to fall trees to take down the fort walls. I thought that was brilliant. But yeah, if you're going in to take out the father to leave everybody without a leader, don't send yours in first. It just seems like a bad idea. But I get it. It's a Hollywood film. And yeah, father takes a knife to the ribs.
Having us believe that Merrick is threatened by Robbins to the point that when the guy says, you know, maybe Robbins should be leading us because he kicked your ass, just makes you think, okay, the father's going to die right now, and Robbins is going to take the helm of the insiders against the outsiders from this point on.
I thought that too.
So it's a little misleading in that regard. But
well, I mean, we do get a confrontation between Merrick and Robbins here. And what does Merrick do? He fucking runs away.
Yeah. So he knows he can't beat Robbins.
Yeah. So again, for an action film, there are decent elements of character development.
I don't think Merrick believes that he can charm his way to beating Robbins.
He's pretty fucking charming, though.
He is so charming.
I know, right?
I kind of wish that guy was one of the good guys.
Me too.
Because I wanted to cheer for him.
I loved Merrick. He's great. A bit of a man crush there. Insiders burning the bodies of their dead triggers past trauma in Robbins. This is a problem I had, and I want to know if it was a problem for you. Do we get enough of his backstory at this point for this to be as effective as it's supposed to be? It's more distracting than anything, right?
Yeah, and we didn't really get we don't really get the backstory until he tells Merrick. Father.
Father, yeah. And it happens frequently in the movie, and I find it very annoying. It's not even surface-level storytelling.
Nope.
It's distracting storytelling.
This dude is afraid of rats and fire, apparently.
Yeah, and when he sees fire, he hears people screaming. I don't care. There's no reason for us to care at this point. John Robbins is not a good guy. We know this.
Nope.
So when he starts having these mini breakdowns, you're like, okay, let's go on to the next scene. It's not effective storytelling. What is crazy good storytelling is how the father ended up on the island. And I really enjoy the fact that it's the old drunk Killian telling the story. Did you see what Killian did when he was talking about how the father was a surgeon and a damned good one?
No.
He rubs the stump where his left arm was.
Oh, that's brilliant. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah. It was very, very good. But yeah, the father had a big house, lots of money, a beautiful wife who got bored and started sleeping around. And eventually she died of an overdose. Father claimed it was a suicide, but a jury found him guilty of murder and gave him a life sentence. Now, that's a crazy story. That's a very good story, a very good backstory. Why is he on the island? Why is he in this prison? Doesn't matter. He just is because it makes the story better. There's no reasoning.
Are they trying to make us at this point believe that he is innocent of the crime?
I believe so, yes.
Didn't buy it.
I did. For a second. I totally, really?
No, I was like, he totally killed her.
Interesting. Why did you think that? I was swayed by the storytelling.
I think it goes back to the exiling of the guy, that there is a surface level here that is very misleading. And this guy, who is quite charming, and you can sit and listen to him talk all day and the totally father? Be. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But at the end of the day, he has a dark underbelly.
Yeah, he really does. I never looked at it that way, but
perhaps very that setup is what made me think right here. Oh yeah, no, he did it.
Yeah,
like he's very much about the rules, and his wife cheating on him is breaking like the first rule of marriage. Mm-hmm. And he can be calm. He can be collected and charming and whatever you want to call it. But you break the rules, and he just snaps, I guess.
That makes so much sense. I never put that together. But yeah, you are 100% right. I should not have been surprised by that reveal later in the film. But I was, and I enjoyed it. So while you were right on top of things, I think that their way of telling the story was effective, at least to me. But yeah, that makes me enjoy this character so much more.
Yeah, probably should have watched the movie when you're 13 instead of 12 and you would have got it.
You can shut the fuck up. That's what you can do. But no, the way you just described that makes the father the perfect adversary for Merrick. And having Lance Henriksen act opposite Stuart Wilson in these roles, I think is brilliant. They juxtapose so well. Yeah, I don't think you could cast it any better.
They're opposite sides of the same coin.
Yeah. And they almost sound like they were friends when they talk to each other, which I love because they are so very similar, but just different enough to be enemies. Like I love it.
After their discussion, during the attack.
Yeah.
Before when Robbins is kind of surveying the environment, he's kind of under the floorboards and just get the actual conversation between Merrick and father.
Yeah.
I legitimately thought that father was gonna be his father and not just the moniker of it.
Yeah, Merrick even says earlier on at the Outsiders camp, he's like, let's go see dad.
Yeah, and later on I kind of came to the conclusion, oh, he's just being defiant and refusing to use his actual name that they use. But that early I was like, oh, maybe that's how he got the moniker of father, is that he was Merrick's father and then Merrick's pissed and became the Outsiders because his father became a father figure for all these other people.
Yeah, but we could have a lot of fun with hypothetical storylines in this world because the characters are okay, but the actors bring these characters to life and give them so much more richness. I like the ideas you've come up with for this movie so far. Like always, you seem to have some pretty good ideas to make a better product, I'd say. I love that. I love that so much. It would make this movie so much better. Where was I here? Oh, yeah. So Robin sees insiders taking more pieces of a structure to the water. And we get the reveal that they're trying to make a boat that can't be detected by satellite. But two helicopters appear and destroy it. What do you think about this subplot?
Don't need it.
I hate it.
Yeah, and at no point did I think that this was ever actually going to work.
No. I get it, but I don't enjoy it. And I think that's par for the course. I don't think a lot of people really enjoy this part of the story whatsoever. And the weird thing is, we're given this plot point, which we will return to. It's destroyed, and then we just go into a different character's backstory. So it's kind of jarring in that respect. But we do get to learn about Dysart, which gives him much more of a human treatment, I guess, since he's just a dude who's there. But, like, holy fuck, man, he's paid to make a bomb that killed 50 people. And, you know, he's come to terms with the fact that the island is where he belongs, so he's definitely not going to try and get in the boat to leave. I like that. I like that a lot for this character.
I like it. I think anybody would still take the opportunity to get off the island.
Probably.
Yeah, you ain't fooling me, man. You might believe that you deserve your punishment and so forth, but you'd take the chance to get off that island if you had it.
Agreed. What do you think about them trying to humanize this character and then give us a ridiculously unbelievable plot point that he's working with a V8 engine that's missing a part, but Robin saw that exact part at Merrick's camp?
It's such a stretch.
It's a huge fucking stretch.
And he saw that at Merrick's place when, what, he was there for 15 minutes and half of it was in a pit? Like,
and it's all junk everywhere.
Yeah, no.
No, it's bad. It's real bad. But Robin sets out for the Outsiders camp to get that one small part that he somehow saw. Here we get something that I truly believe to be the main strength of the film.
Okay.
We've touched on it before. It's the interaction between the insiders. Because, like, Robbins and Hawkins don't like each other, but are willing to work together. Dysart creates Molotovs for Robbins, but even seems disappointed with himself for making them. The movie's completely ridiculous, but the characters seem surprisingly realistic. Except for Casey. And it gets worse and worse with him, and makes me start to agree with you that Casey is a little much.
Yeah. Yeah, just tone it down, dude. That's cool. Just take it down a notch.
And he decides to follow Robbins.
Ah, moron.
It's not going to end well, man.
You couldn't even stand at the wall. Like, what?
Yeah.
What do you think you're going to do?
Make a lot of noise, apparently.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if this is bad writing for the character or bad writing for the viewers, because it's a really cheap way to garner emotion. It's like seeing an injured puppy. Like, it's not a story element that's making you feel bad. It's cruelty, basically. It's fast and easy, and it lessens the film for me. But it's an action movie. I fucking get it. I know what you're doing. Outsiders camp. Every time I've seen this movie, I've missed this part. Merrick has killed the leaders of all the other gangs. That's his way of trying to unite them.
Well, under one leader. And yeah. I like how they do it behind closed doors, because I don't know how they make him intimidating. So just don't show it.
You're right. You are totally right. That's the best way to do it. And it's a sick power move. But this is where they capture Casey.
Of course they do, because Casey's an idiot. And why is he even there?
Well, what are your thoughts on the weird device they strap him into?
I don't care. It could have just been rats. It's overly complicated, and it didn't need to be.
Yeah, it's a great visual, though.
I get it. You know,
collar of jagged glass.
Yes, and that is the type of stuff that they could have scrounged up in this place from parts of the salvage drops, whatever. But it's still just like, before this we saw a pit, and now they have this device. I don't think any of them are smart enough to create this device.
I agree completely.
Just a pit of rats. Good enough.
We are led to believe that outside of Merrick, everybody here is a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
We have no reason to believe otherwise. This is where Robbins infiltrates the camp, though. I guess he killed an outsider and stole his clothes?
That's what I presume. Although, he's not even covering his face.
No.
He's got like a hat on. It's like, okay, sure.
But he's also caught relatively easily.
Well, yeah. Tried to save Casey, because Casey's an idiot who was told, don't go, you can't do anything. And he went and didn't do anything.
And the result?
He's dead.
They're forced to fight each other.
Yeah. And Casey loves him so much that he tells him to just kill him.
I think that's part of it.
No, it's obviously because he knows that he doesn't stand a chance, and at least Robbins would. But I'm sticking with it's because he loves him.
I know that's a joke, but I think you were partially right. I think he does. He admires him so much. But yes, Robbins is the only person to have escaped Merrick and the Outsiders. There's no way Casey's escaping them. There's no way he's going to make it back to the Insiders camp. So if somebody has to die, it has to be Casey. And it affected me, man. Like, sometimes the movie does hit hard. I know you didn't like Casey, but I feel like it should have been harder for Robbins, because his guilt is his main motivator. And this seems to do almost nothing for him.
Yeah. Well, he was tired of him following him around like a sick puppy anyway.
Yeah, but like, if
you know, I had such different reactions when it happened. I was like, it's about time.
Meanwhile, I'm crying. But yeah, if Robin's big thing that he can't get over is the fact that he killed innocent people, and he kills Casey, this kid, and he's like, man, fuck, I guess I had to.
Well, because Casey did it to himself.
But it's bad.
It doesn't matter. It's over. He's gone. We don't have to deal with him anymore.
Okay. You hate this character so much. It's not even. I don't even want to talk about Casey. I'm just talking about how much, how much of a hypocrite Robin's character is.
I hope you can't guess one of my awards for later.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You didn't even feel bad with the reveal that the Outsiders are going to eat Casey?
No.
You fucking monster.
Well, in that regard, I had strong cannibalistic vibes from both of these tribes.
Oh, you're going back to the seedy underbelly of Sanctuary?
Yes.
That would have been interesting.
One of them was disproved when Ernie Hudson's character, I can't remember his name, tells Robbins not to go in that room. You never go in that room. I thought it was going to be like a room of bodies that they eat. It was for the boat thing, but I got that impression. In my mind, I'm like, well, they're on this island. If somebody dies, why would you let it go to waste? So it's not to say that they actually did show cannibalism before it, but I had it so ingrained in my mind that it didn't throw me for a curve when it happened.
Fair enough. You definitely had a better eye for the movie. I kind of got wrapped up in some of the events. So, well done. I missed that completely. It was very effective for me, but you nailed it. Were you laughing at me?
No, I'm just thinking Casey will now serve more of a purpose as food than he did.
Oh, shut up! Shut up! He's a good character. He's a little overbearing.
Well, I mean, the movie could have gone very differently if he didn't get himself captured, and Robbins could have just stole the part and gotten out of there.
That wouldn't have happened, though. He got captured so easily. Can you imagine? They're like, they just send Robbins out because he they don't send him out. He goes. He's going. It's his call. And they just catch him, kill him, and eat him. Meanwhile, the Insider's just waiting for him to come back with that bit for the VA.
And then the Molotovs just get thrown into their camp.
Poor Dysart. It's like, oh, I knew those were going to come back and bite me.
Oh, I guess I created another bomb that killed 50 people.
Yeah, let's take that 50 up to 148. So the spy saves Robin's life and helps him escape with the engine part, because fuck you, this is a movie.
Yeah.
And Insiders prepare for an attack, which I think is a great scene. Very interesting move to abandon the compound and setting up traps that will kill Outsiders before they even realize there's nobody to attack. Again, like you said, Home Alone.
Yeah, it's another one of those.
Father's Secret. He reveals to Robbins that he's dying of cancer and wants Robbins to replace him. Father's second secret, my wife's death was no suicide.
No.
Shut up, man. That was a surprise for me.
My whole reaction when it happened was, duh.
You just shit all over the next note I have.
Okay.
Which is best character development in the movie is done with one line of dialogue.
I guess if you aren't already there, you can call it development.
I was enjoying the movie.
Nobody said you weren't.
You're mean.
I'm not. I'm just telling you my view of the movie. You take it as mean.
This is followed up with something that I absolutely hated.
Okay.
They get the V8 running, and it emits flames, which triggers Robin's flashbacks again.
So stupid.
Fine. It's just fire.
So stupid.
Can you imagine if he had that same reaction to all of the fire he had seen in this movie already? Like, everywhere he'd turn around inside a room, he'd just have a flashback. What's going on with Robbins? He's fucking broken. I don't know.
Why do you think you don't see flickering for lighting? It's like
it's a fucking hour and 58 minutes of Ray Liotta frozen in place. But at least they give us a fucking explanation for it. Just way too late. He's ordered to attack a site that was believed to be manufacturing bioweapons. And as a result, 342 innocent women and children were killed. Everything was covered up, and Robbins was given a medal.
So our method of making people seem a little bit more like heroes is to make it that their crimes were inadvertent.
Yeah.
Or misleading.
Yeah. There are no good people in this movie.
No.
So why is he trying to escape? Let me ask you that first and foremost.
He wants to get the truth out.
Yeah.
Is the big thing. He wants to get out so that people know. Like, he was what? I forget what they said. He got some award. Was it like a Purple Heart or something for what he
did? Yeah.
And he wants people to know that that was just part of a cover-up. And yeah.
Does he? Because he doesn't fucking say that to anybody in this movie.
I thought he did. Thought when he asked to be on the boat, he got into that. And then when Father was passing away, he furthered it by saying, like, the truth needs to get out.
Yes. I thought the Father's talking about the truth of what's going on the island, because the island is secret.
Well, I thought it was, like, one of those conversations where they're both talking about it, but they mean kind of different things.
Yeah, well, the Father's point makes sense to me. The fact that Robbins has not brought this up to anybody until right now gives his reasoning no weight whatsoever. And honestly, it felt so cheap that I'm like, oh, this is him just trying to be like, look, this is my reason. I'm going to try and convince him that I need to get on that boat and get off this island. I'm not going to do it. But if they think I'm leaving for the right reasons, I'm guaranteed to be on that boat.
See, I wouldn't even think that, because in my mind, if Robbins wanted on that boat, he was just going to get on that boat.
Yeah, you're probably
I'm not
going
to talk you into it. Try to stop me. And then they would just light a fire. But before that, we know your weakness. Flaming rats!
Can you imagine? Can you imagine they just start pelting him with flaming rats? Oh my god. I want to see that so bad.
It would be so confusing for him, because when he sees fire, he freezes in place, but when he sees rats, he runs away.
It would be the biggest glitch in the Matrix ever.
Yeah.
But cut to the next morning, and holy fuck, that raid is crazy. Starting off with the spies head on a pike.
Yeah.
And followed by a full-on charge by the outsiders looked amazing. And the reaction to storming a camp that is empty. Merrick's expression is fucking hilarious. It says everything.
Merrick is so good.
Yeah. He's so entertaining. I think that's another spoiled award. But I have a question for you.
Okay.
Why would Robbins announce his presence to the Horde instead of just firing that rocket into them as a surprise attack?
I don't have an answer for you. That's a movie moment.
Yeah.
Because all he did was give them a chance to prepare themselves or scatter a bit. But it's like they're all right there. They're funneled in. Just shoot the thing. Yeah. And let's be honest. Merrick is right at the center of it. Mm-hmm. He should not be alive.
No. Fuck no. That place fucking explodes. The entire place goes up.
It would be different if he had sent everyone in and didn't go in head first and was in the middle of it, because he's right at the top of the stairs with no like escape. He's not on the outer edges. He should not be alive.
Now, his best bet for survival is jumping off the side of the structure and hoping that he doesn't die. That's not a good plan.
No, but and giving them the heads up that he's about to fire it off is an even worse plan.
So the heat signature that the explosion sets off will alert more than the prison satellite. I enjoy that bit of storytelling. So people noticing that the prison island exists, that's a thing now. Good. But now the insiders charge. From where? Where were they hiding?
I don't have a good or funny answer to this.
But they had to have been hiding close enough that they would be there as soon as the fire stopped. So they were within the blast range somehow, but not visible, yet not underwater. It doesn't make any sense. But the remaining outsiders flee as the warden boards a chopper on the mainland. So, final showdown between Merrick and Robbins.
How is this a thing?
I don't know.
Merrick should be dead. There should be no final showdown, but hey, it's a movie.
Do you find this fight way too quick?
I mean, it's longer than it should be. He's fighting a ghost.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, if you're going to do this, if you're going to pull your movie magic and have this guy survive, even though everyone immediately around him is dead, then it should be pretty epic.
Yeah, and it's just not. Not only is it not epic, but we get the deaths of both the father and Merrick. It's like they realized that the movie was going too long and had to wrap it up.
No, at the very least, you could have had father put out one like final thing where they're fighting and he like charges and throws him and Merrick off of the structure.
And they both land on that spike.
Yeah.
That would have been father's
final act of saving the insiders type thing.
Yeah, no, he just gets stabbed and falls on the ground and dies.
Yep.
So that boat they were building is bombed and Dysart's killed. And it's all because apparently King is a traitor and has been keeping the warden informed.
Why do you need this?
I don't know. It was definitely a swerve for me. I don't know if you saw that coming, but no, I agree that we don't need it.
The king was the last person I expected it to be. They definitely did get me with that one. But at the same time, it was unnecessary.
Yeah, completely. So Robbins keeps father's secret and lies that father wanted Hawkins to take his place.
I like that moment.
I like that a lot.
Robbins didn't really want it.
He didn't. He could do it, but he didn't want to. And he knew Hawkins not only was capable of doing it, but wanted to do it. Believed in father's, you know, vision.
Yeah. At the very base of it, at least cared enough about the insiders to want to lead them.
Yeah. Helicopter lands and the insiders steal it, leaving the warden on the island. So the new mission now is let the world know the truth about the prison system and about Robbins and blah, 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 blah. The film ends with the warden and King standing in a clearing, the outsiders closing in on them, fade to black, roll credits. It's a weak fucking ending.
I'd say so.
Yeah.
The warden and the king part should have happened earlier.
Yeah, agreed.
And then maybe even have Merrick and Robbins have a final fight on the helicopter or something.
Yeah, it needed something. It needed to go out on a better action set piece.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's 1994's No Escape.
Should we get into some numbers?
Yeah. The movie looks good, man. It looks very good. There's some big names in it. Talent creating it, debatable. It's based off of a pre-existing work. So what do you think the budget was?
$8 million.
20.
Ooh, okay.
I think that's reasonable. The gross?
I'd never heard of it, so I have a difficult time gauging its success. I'll say it was a failure. $12 million.
22.4.
Okay.
So yes, still a failure. I think all of the ratings are pretty much where you expect them to be. But what do you think they are for IMDb?
7.1.
6.1.
Oof, okay.
Tomato meter?
Critics, 58.
Very close, 60.
Okay.
Audience?
I feel like that's going to be the highest, so I'm going to go 74.
It was the lowest, 41.
Oh, geez. Okay. I was way off on that.
Yeah. But award time.
Let's do it.
I'm very surprised that, well, okay, I think your least favorite character is going to be Casey. And I think I know why. But for me, my least favorite character, and it was very well performed, but my least favorite character is Tom King, played by Ian McNeice. Because it just, it's a neat idea that just doesn't need to be there and doesn't fucking go anywhere. The character plays a twist in the film that is completely unnecessary, but it's supposed to make us think that it's incredibly important. It's just, it's fucking annoying, man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You?
It was Casey.
Yeah.
No, I don't
Jesus
think I
Christ,
need
to, I'm shocked.
I don't think I need to go into any detail. I think I've been pretty clear. Yeah. I didn't hold that one close to the chest.
But your favorite character?
That's a tough one. That is
no, it's
really,
not.
No, it's tough. It's tough. It's tough. Do you want to go first?
You're being serious.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go first.
Okay.
It's Merrick.
Okay.
He is, as we've already said, funny, charming. The character is just so well written that you love to see him on screen. Perfect opposite to the father. But I wanted to see more of Merrick than I wanted to see of the father. Stuart Wilson nailed this role, I think, better than anybody else. And every time Merrick was on screen, I was paying full attention because I wanted to hear what he had to say. I wanted to see what he was going to do. It was captivating. So why are you torn?
I was like, I don't know if I can pick between Merrick and the father, and I'll let Ben go first, and then I'll pick the other one so they both get shine. And then as soon as you said Merrick, I was like, damn it, I also have to say Merrick.
He's good, man. He's so fucking good.
I don't want to take anything away from the father because Lance Henriksen was phenomenal. And even though I had a couple issues with the father and completely thinking that he was much worse person than he, I guess, well, ultimately was, I don't know. But Lance Henriksen is so good in it.
He's amazing.
And they both deserve credit, but Merrick is just so charismatic. And honestly, I would have preferred almost to even see the roles reversed so we could have had more camera time with Stuart Wilson. It's gotta be Merrick.
Yeah.
Although if the award was for actor most capable of standing and staring, it would have been Ray Liotta.
Yeah. Most affected by fire.
Yeah. He had some moments of just staring. Even at the beginning when he was facing the warden and he had to deliver the punishment, he's just staring at the warden. There's a lot of staring.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's Merrick.
Well, I would normally go off memorable line, but you just did favorite character last, so you do memorable line first.
Okay, so my favorite line is right at the beginning, and it is the warden saying, "You have come here from all over the world because society has no further use for you."
Gold.
Yeah, and it's also because I knew that line, but I didn't know why.
Continue.
And I did some thinking and researching, and I realized that I had the Godsmack debut album.
Oh, yeah.
And at the beginning of the song Immune, they use that soundbite. So as soon as I heard it in the movie the first time, my ears perked up. I'm like, wait, did I see this movie? No, I didn't see this movie. I know I didn't see this movie, but I know that line. Did they use that line in another movie? And eventually I figured it out, and I'm like, that's now ingrained in my head. Because it also made me think that Godsmack used a line from No Escape, which is a movie I didn't even know anybody knew. So it made it that much cooler.
Yeah, I completely forgot about their use of that line in that album. But that was a solid album back in the day, man. I didn't know you were a Godsmack fan.
Mm-hmm.
It's not memorable line, it's favorite line.
Okay.
It's Merrick. It's a long one, but it encompasses everything I love about the character. And it's after he captures Robbins for the second time. And he's like, you know, I'm really trying to retain my faith in humanity here, but you are making it very, very difficult. You know that? I welcomed you with open arms. I treated you with respect. I even offered you a position on my staff. And what did you do? You turned around and you made a fucking horse's ass out of me. I hate it when that happens.
Oh, he's so good.
He's so good. But the line is that this is not the first time. And I find that absolutely fucking hilarious. He is so good at delivering absurd lines and making them sound believable. Stuart Wilson killed it in this movie.
Oh, so good.
I want to say I think we have the same memorable scene, but I don't know.
I lost track of who goes first here.
It would be me now because we switched it up.
Okay.
For me, it's the fight between Robbins and Ralph, because it completely changed the tone of the movie for me. It doesn't really work, but the shift was so jarring that it stands out, and I didn't know what to expect from the rest of the movie. Because up until that point, very serious. We've already had a murder, we've had a hostage taking, we've had police brutality. Then we get this hysterically funny fight scene that lasts a matter of seconds, and I don't know where we're going from here. So that's it for me. What?
I wrote, quotation, 5 minute, end quote, fight with Ralph. It was so good.
It was fucking amazing.
Building up Ralph to be this like terrible threat to Ray Liotta, and how are you going to get out of here? And he's one of our best. And then it's over in a second. It was so good. It was just so good.
Even Merrick's reaction, and I'm not saying this is exactly what he said, but it was basically like, I like that. I didn't expect it, but I like it.
Oh, it was so good. All right. So those are the awards. What are your final thoughts on No Escape?
I really enjoy the movie, but it's nothing special. It's a really fun watch. There's a good chance if you like action films, you've seen this movie without having seen it. The acting's great. Sound design's really good. And there are some pretty original moments, but there's some really annoying, annoying scenes, annoying characters that kind of make the movie drag. It's a 2-hour movie that's 30 minutes too long.
Oh,
you could have cut out a lot, and 100%. It would have been much more enjoyable. If you haven't seen it, give it a watch. If you have, revisit it. It's nothing amazing, but it's entertaining. So I would recommend it, but don't make a point of trying to track this one down. It's no hidden gem. It's a fun mid-90s action film. You?
I really enjoyed it, but I'm 100% with you. It's too long. And you could easily cut out things like Stefano entirely. None of his scenes were really necessary, and it could have just been a nameless guy delivering gum. So that includes a bunch of
weird thing to say.
Well, it's true. Like, what else did he do? He shows up at Ray Liotta's place before Ray Liotta goes, asking him to sign for the boots. Like,
That's gonna be the description for this episode. A nameless guy delivers gum.
But that's, you know what I mean. Like, these are scenes that are inconsequential to the plot.
Yes,
could
they
have
are.
Been easily removed mm-hmm. and shaved down the runtime of the movie. You could have taken out the entirety of the boat stuff.
Yes,
and just 100%. Had it be a fight for survival, and the yep. movie would have worked just as well. That being said, I still enjoyed it. I would recommend it. But going beyond a single watch with that runtime makes yeah. that a little bit tougher. I don't think people would want to do repeat viewings of it.
Yeah, it's a movie that I'm definitely going to watch again at some point in the future. But I wish it got a better treatment on Blu-ray. Like, give me a director's commentary. I'd love to know some of the creative decisions that were made, why they were made, what had to be cut out, what was left in, and why. Like, I have questions about this movie. It is an enjoyable film, but I think it could be better. And I would like to know what led to this final result. I'm glad that we did pick this movie. I'm glad that you gave me the option of picking 1994 and not knowing this is going to be the option. But I'm glad we finally got a chance to talk about this, especially where it was such an important film for your dad.
All right. So that's our thoughts on No Escape. If you guys want to share your thoughts, hit us up on social media. We are on Twitter at BSBargainBin, Facebook.com/BSBargainBin, YouTube.com/@BSBargainBin, where you can leave a comment in the comment section, or BSBargainBin.com, where you can also find a link to our merchandise. We did actually just revise all of the pricing on our merchandise, so you can grab things a little bit cheaper than they were before. Ben.
Mm-hmm.
That was my pick. Now it's time for one of your picks. What are we watching next week, bud?
Next week, we are watching a movie that you and I actually watched together a few years ago. It's pretty funny. It's zany.
Is it something to involving undead rodents?
It is. Next week, we're talking 2014's Zombievers.
Looks like a beaver dam.
Let's go take a look.
You girls from out of town?
We're staying over there in my cousin's place. We were looking for beavers.
Well, hell, ain't we all?
Well, I've had enough excitement for one day. What was that? Someone in there?
There's a beaver in the bathroom.
Can we please go swimming now? Ever occurred to any of you that there might be more beavers?
The fuck?
Is that blood?
Holy shit!
Never seen a real beaver before, close.
Well, maybe you should try going down on me once in a while, but
we cannot turn against each other right now. That is exactly what the beavers would want.
Beavers are generally more active at night. That road's locked. We sure as hell can't get through on foot.
Fuck a bag of dead!
Wow, there's no way I'm jumping up for this.
I mean, really?
Until next time, have a good one.
All the best!